Okay, Ken, you wanted to talk about accessibility.
Yes, I did. Yes, accessibility. I would like people to, you know, the Syndicated Thursday thing that we do. I would like people to, if you go to a show or something, or a Lynx Fest or something, and you see a presentation that you like, as you're watching it or afterwards, if you could make a note of the particular times a presenter did something on the screen that wasn't obvious in audio, so that we can put those on HPR as augmented podcasts. So, for example, if somebody, there was a very good example of that, was the image editing presentation at Ogcamp, and his first 5 minutes of his presentation, which is very good, is, I am this, I was that, until this happened, and then I got caught by them. And, you know, in the background there were pictures of, this is a picture of a hacker, this particular picture of a policeman. So we'd like to be able to make our shows more accessible to people with visual impairment, obviously. But I was also trying to think of how to make our shows more accessible to people with who are deaf by doing some sort of text-to-speech. And if people have ideas about that, I'd be appreciate to hear them, proprietary or open source. I'm open to anything.
You mean speech-to-text?
That's exactly what I mean. Excuse me, that's exactly what I mean. But on a side note, if somebody who doesn't want to come on to HPR or is not, you know, is uncomfortable for reason of language or reason of speech impediment or any other impediment where they would be reluctant to speak something on the show, if they want to prepare a script that we will either do text speech on or we'll have somebody narrate it for you, that is absolutely an option. So please don't let that stop you submitting a show.
That's a great idea, Ken. I've never thought of that, and I would like to volunteer to narrate stuff that people send in if they can't actually, yeah, if they're not comfortable with their spoken abilities.
And I would like to second that. I have no problem doing that either.
Yeah, me neither. I don't think there's going to be any shortage of people who would be opposed to reading a script.
Kadu, though, I don't think you could sound anything like me, though.
There's nothing wrong with you, Art. Well, actually, there's a lot.
Just turn down the bass.
Yeah, yeah, I'll just turn up the bass, and yeah, I can do it.
You know, I could possibly do that as well. Anytime I've tried to actually read from a script, I struggle. Unless I'm actually just off the cuff, I don't know what it is. So if I can get over that, then I'll help out with that as well.
Yeah, no question. Scripts are difficult to manage because you always sound like you're reading from a script, but it's a good idea. If someone can't say it for themselves, then yeah, totally, it is a good idea.
I have another suggestion on that too, though.
Go ahead.
That would be a good time for somebody to get together with another person and do it as like, not an interview, but as like just a talking session.
You mean if someone can't organize their thoughts enough to get an episode out? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking, if somebody can write a script, then they should be able to talk to somebody else about it.
Not if they can't physically speak, though, you know? I mean, that's what Ken was talking about, is someone who has an issue that they can't, like, a stutter that won't go away, or, you know, if they're deaf and they might not speak, they might not they might not be using their vocal cords. They might not have vocal cords if they had surgery.
Or perhaps English isn't your first language and you're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think also for the first couple of times, I would probably want to present with someone, because then if there is an awkward pause, you know, you stop speaking, there's someone else then to fill the gap.
There's some people as well who aren't really, they're not technically minded enough to set up a mic, and or either that, or they don't have a quiet enough area that they can do it without like screaming kids in the background and hubby's TV or whatever, you know. So it might not even be that practical for them to actually sit and record.
There's always a throne room.
Yeah, as far as that goes, I mean, that's the kind of thing where I'm going to have to sound maybe a little harsh and just say, you know, please get over that, because you can record into a cell phone, into an MP3 player, anything. And yes, you can go in the bathroom, you can go to the park and have the birds chirping in the background is always cool. you know what I mean? Like setting up a computer to do it should not have to be the barrier to entry. I mean, at the very least, that's we have the call-in lines for exactly that.
Yeah, see, there's that, but another thing I was thinking about.
I'm just using the mic on my laptop right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be honest, I think my biggest barrier to entry would be choosing a topic, I think, more than a technical reason.
Sorry. No, the other thing I was thinking about there was in the background, if there's something like MTV playing away in the background while you're recording and you can clearly hear, I don't know, Britney Spears or something in the background of someone talking. I mean, what about copyright issues there?
Yeah, there is that. That's a good point. But I think at some point, you know, who cares a whole lot if it's for the copyright thing? I mean, you're not intentionally redistributing that, so that would be okay. But, I mean, yeah, you can go into the bathroom to block out MTV or to the park, or if you live in the city, go on the roof of your building or something like that. And to what Cornomial was saying, picking a topic, I have found that for me and for some of the other people that I've talked to, the best topic that you can do is something that you're excited about and grab it, you know, strike while the iron's hot. If you're doing something and you're excited about it, you're jazzed about it, go ahead and record that while it's still fresh. Even if you're not an expert on it, even if you don't think you're ready to do it, you can always do a follow-up or somebody else can do a follow-up. I think that's, for me anyway, the best way to pick a topic like that.
And also, if you think of topics that you'd like to hear on HPR, please email admin@hackerpublicradio.org and we'll put them on our requested topics page.
Yep, which is hackerpublicradio.org/contribute, I think, and it's about halfway down the page.
Yeah, that's the one, though. We'll probably put that onto a dedicated section. But
I would personally, one of the things that I really
like
about...
I don't have that problem.
I guess...
Everything, if you go ahead, over.
We've got a bit of lag here, obviously. Maybe it's a British thing, but every time I hear the word topic, I think of a chocolate bar. Maybe it's just me.
It's just you.
I've got no point of reference for that.
A topic in the UK, a topic is like a chocolate bar, like a Snickers or something like that.
Oh, I had no idea. We could say subject if you like.
God, that sounds royal. Two royal subjects.
This is what you are not helping the conversation.
My bad. I'll step out.
No, don't.
But anyway, I found Becky Cornomial that once you start doing this, everything starts looking like a HPR topic, and there are people around you who are people who are going to be interviewed on your HPR episode, or who have some interesting topic that you can, or subject that you can turn into a show at some stage. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I'm not suitable for work though with podcasting, because I do sometimes get a bit carried away and the odd naughty slips out.
This is HPR. We have an explicit tag on iTunes.
Yeah, on HPR there's no barring of that language at all.
Although I do like Pokies, this may not be suitable for work, blah, 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 if you want to put that in the front.
Oh, fuck me. I've been really careful not to swear at all.
I didn't know that.
This
episode
may not be suitable for work.
Now that I do, I'd like to tell you how we really feel.
I guess no one here has listened to, what was it, episode 69 of Hacker Public Radio?
Well, it would have to be episode number 69, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty
yes,
sure that's
that was
the
point.
Yeah.
Dirty
yeah,
brothers.
I don't recall. I'm sure I listened, but I don't recall.
I couldn't even get through that one. I literally, and I'm not really that squeamish, but that was too much for me.
You 69 know, is such a fantastic number, but the view's awful.
I disagree.
Oh.
Shocking.
At this point, it would be prudent to quote Father Jack, arse!
So we'll make a note that at 24 minutes into the, what is this, the sixth hour, that this is the naughty segment.
Yeah, this is when they discovered that there was no censorship on the show.
But that episode was actually interesting because the whole topic was that the adult industry fuels the internet. And it does. It did back then, and it still does right now.
I don't know. I'm really not so sure about that. I'm sorry, but I'm just not sure about that.
Yeah, I've never
gaming maybe
that.
Gaming maybe, but I really don't know about that adult industry fueling anything, to be honest.
Sex
well,
sells,
definitely...
but it's boring.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it may have fueled the choice for VHS over Betamax, but I mean, wow,
yeah, I think
that was so long ago.
I would beg to differ to everybody. My friend Bob has it on very, very good authority that that is the case.
Meaning...
Does Bob live in Amsterdam?
So Bob serves prawn all the time.
A significant portion of any ISP's business is based on the back of the adult industry.
Yeah, no doubt. It certainly is. But how much of that is, I'm going to say, unfairly weighted because of the sheer bandwidth that video takes up, as opposed to, you know, other topics where people might not, they might not care whether they're watching video or not.
Yeah, just because it's there and people are downloading it doesn't mean that if it wasn't there, people wouldn't be using the internet.
Well, the other thing to think about there is that if you go and watch, say, a half-hour TV show on YouTube, you're watching that for the full half hour. If you're watching porn, then that's not porn's for. So you're not going to be watching for that long. And usually when you finish, you stop. So
you speak for yourself.
I'll walk
yeah,
into that
I like
one,
my
I?
Porn to have a good story. This
Sorry.
Time. What are you doing?
That's okay.
It's not porn, it's art.
Yes.
Mr. Webb, are you saying that it only lasts about 5 minutes? Is that what you're saying?
Hey, it lasted the 5 minutes. I just said it doesn't take half an hour.
Again, speak for yourself.
I'll let you away with that. See, the other thing here is when all the rush to HD, I mean, who really wants HD porn?
3D porn, on the other hand.
3D as in Three Dwarfs, or is that too explicit?
No, 3D as in three-dimensional, especially if you take into account that things up closer look a lot bigger.
See, when we get to this subject, this is where the people who are, you know, think that future is going to be a dystopian future really win, because in a lot of those books, they had the feelies and not just the movies.
Did I miss the dirty segment?
No, yeah, you're right, we're pretty dirty right now, bro.
Right here.
Hell yes.
However, I do have to back up what Becky has says, that when Bob was deploying something to hotels, the study showed that the subscription to certain channels was 5 minutes for some guests and a lot longer for other guests, depending on their gender.
And depending on whether or not they fell asleep after.
No, we're talking about and also about subscriptions to certain channels on certain channels on certain.
Yeah,
things.
Yeah, I know. You can talk dirty now, Ken. We'll put the tag on this section.
Well, I'm actually more worried about not saying anything that I'm not allowed to say.
Yeah, we don't know, Bob. That's okay.
Are these the ones that you join one-handed?
I think that's the idea. Yeah.
You know, there was something, the latest Linux Outlaws, I listened to the podcast, and there was some comment in IRC where it said about the porn filter, the Antica, and someone in their IRC pointed out, well, that was why they changed the buttons to the other side. I just thought that was brilliant.
That was a good one.
You guys are putting me in a strange position.
Oh, your kids near the speakers?
No, nothing like that. The opposite. You know, I work construction, you know, so 90% of my day is dirty words and unfriendly type of things, but I've never done that podcasting. I've always tried to be a rather nice guy out of my podcast, but now you guys are tempting me.
Well, I do know of a construction company near where I live called Erection Perfection.
Every time I get an erection, it's perfection.
Okay, I would also like to point out that yes, we did have episode 69, but I would also advise, yes, people should go and listen to episode 69, but they should also then go and listen to episode 586, which is Sigflup's episode on The Internet is for Porn, with a discussion about the other side, basically. So well worth a listen.
The other side, as in life after the great deletion.
No, more like about, yes, the internet is for porn, ha ha ha, lads. That's what she said and all the rest of it, but more about that every person out there is a human being and somebody's daughter or son. And, it makes you think about the other side of it. Yes, episode 69 does say that it does fuel porn, does fuel development, does fuel technology and all the rest, but then episode 586 does say that yes, but there's a price to pay socially and morally for that, and just balances it out, which is another thing I like about HPR, that somebody can do a show, somebody else can do a counter show. It's a good thing.
Yeah. You know, I wonder actually if the next phase of development on the internet is going to be triggered by SOPA, and that when it becomes easy and legal, unquote, for the governments to just censor the internet, there's going to be a huge boom in industries and technologies to get around that. I mean, you can already do that with like Mafia Fire and all that. But I wonder if that's going to be the next, just to turn all these different tools and VPNs and all that to the normal people rather than just the geeks. I wonder if that's going to be the next boom area on the internet fueled by SOPA.
Well, it's obviously going to be like any legislation against something that somebody wants more than, you know, the people who are going to be disadvantaged by a SOPA aren't going to be the people that are downloading things illegally. They're going to work around it. It'll take them a day, 2 days maybe. It'll be the little old ladies who want to visit a site that was taken down for some ridiculous reason. The people who don't go out and see how to get around these things. But the people they're going after will be around it by the end of the day, you know.
Absolutely. The internet will route around your sentence.
The thing yeah. CMSA CD there. Well, what I was going to say is, if you read the the Linux Lock, where the guy from the Phoenix Foundation, the Phoenix Project, the Helios Project, talks about his adventures in tech support and get this CD play. So she ended up becoming like somebody who learned all the technologies just to get around the fact that her granddaughter copied a CD for her and it wouldn't play.
Yeah, I mean, on the last Crivens, I mentioned about, I thought that things like SOPA, it was basically like evolution or like war, where evolution says Australia was kind of, the wildlife in Australia is a lot of venomous and poisonous and whatever, but all of that was, they all evolved because something else in their environment was stronger than they were. Or more venomous or whatever than they were. So it's a constant, one evolves to meet the other. Sorry, dude, I interrupted you. I'm trying to get a message there, bro, my bad.
Now the text-to-speech is getting me too.
Yeah, it's just that delay thing that's happening again.
Yeah, sorry about that. I just sort of spotted the story there and I kind of realised I was stepping all over you there, my bad. It's like one side does something and then the other side evolves to meet that and counter it. Evolution was like that. Everything evolves like that to meet its adversaries. It's prey and it's hunted and all this kind of stuff. And war's the same thing. When one side invents one thing, the other side invents something to counter it. So it's going to be the exact same thing. When the powers that be invent or create legislation to do one thing, then the people who can will jump in and invent ways to get around about it, and they'll make it more available, and it's just a constant cat and mouse thing.
So do you think it's a good thing, as in terms of creating new technologies to circumvent, you know, these walls that the governments and stuff are putting up?
I do not.
For me, it depends on where the honesty is in the system, because the governments are never going to be honest. When they're controlled by corporations, they're never going to be honest. And they're never going to do things with the right intentions and with fairness and with transparency and all that. They're never going to do that. So while that's the situation, then yeah, damn right, work your way around about them. It's like, who watches the watchers?
But to be fair, the governments don't really understand, so that makes them nervous.
Well, that's true. I mean, when politicians can't be expected to know everything, That's why they call on different advisors. When they're looking into something, they call upon different advisors. And at the moment, all they get is advisors from the various industries who profit from it, and they've got their own agenda to push, and they tell the story from their particular point of view and phrase it in such a way that changes they would like to see that only benefit them.
What I'd like to see as a solution is mesh networks. I've thought that for a long time, that an ISP is where, you know, an ISP basically to me seems like an error in the network. It's a single choke point. It's a bad thing for the internet. And that the best thing would be to just route around that and start moving to mesh networks.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more.
Agreed.
I think there's a lot more choke points on the internet than people actually realize until they start hitting home. One is an easy sort of payment system worldwide. And really the only game in town really is PayPal. And then when people start realizing, oh, PayPal are jumping whenever the various senators give them a call, then we need to find something other than PayPal. What else is there? You're sort of struggling there. So I think people don't really realize just how many choke points there are.
So if we're talking about a mesh network, can that actually work?
Yes. Did anyone see the article from the Chaos Computer Club where they're trying to put up their own satellite system?
I did. I was going to bring that up, actually.
And it's not there yet, but right there it could be a independently operated, independently managed network of satellites providing bandwidth to anybody who wants it.
It brings up the point that, you know, we've seen with DIY sites, there's a huge boom in hackerspaces and those kind of things, and then Instructables, and where it isn't just hardcore hackers anymore that are trying to build stuff. You know, it's everybody from somebody who wants to make their own iPad stand, or building their own rockets, launching satellites in outer space, and that the internet's ability to, I guess it's not necessarily advancing science in the premium of science, but in making it more accessible, things like launching a satellite, or maybe not necessarily space travel, but things that used to be out of the reach of people. I think my kids are dumping marbles on my floor above, so sorry about that. But I think the DIY movement in and of itself means that things like this, the rocketry will advance enough and computer controls will advance enough that comes kind of who cares what the government says. Like, even if it is illegal, I mean, what are they going to do? Go around to everybody and shut down their router? I mean,
do you not think we're at that point already?
Yeah, they'll just drone you, man. If they'll just send some unmanned aircraft and just knock whatever you've got down.
Yeah, but the thing is, what they're talking about is having a GSM-type network up in the sky. I'm not necessarily saying it's that fast, but if you look at the Iridium network, which is, you know, if you think of a traditional GSM network where you're on a train and you're going from one cell to the next cell to the next cell, in an Iridium network, it's pretty much the same thing, only you're stationary and the cell network is moving as you go around. But the thing about that is it's incredibly expensive to operate and incredibly expensive to manage. But if they can get this thing up where it's achievable to get a small, maybe half kilo satellite, micro satellite, up into the sky, get enough of them up there, and that the command and control is running, working feasibly, then you can have these things bouncing off from your internet connection up to that thing, relaying to the next satellite, to the next one, to the next one, to the next one, and then back down somewhere else. And because it's space isn't owned, can't be owned by anybody internationally, you know, that's a complete network that you can use right above you, only a few kilometers away. It's brilliant.
Part of my thinking, though... Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. Let me hear what you have to say.
I was going to say that the internet's kind of like drugs, okay? No matter how much effort you put into making drugs illegal, no matter how much money you spend to prevent drugs, people love drugs, and they're going to get it any way that they can. And the more they try to, you know, the more you try to clamp down on the internet, the fact is the technology exists in every router to create a mesh network, you know? And at some point, it becomes just too good. Like, everybody wants access to the internet. And if you shut down the internet, you know, the government can send one drone, but could they send a billion drones? I mean, how many people are on the internet right now?
It would be like them trying to control the time.
Right.
Yeah, this is the point.
Plus, let's not forget that most governments are pretty incompetent. So, you know, I don't think we've got much to worry about.
For some reason, I could just picture, when you said the internet is like drugs, I could just picture Mr. Garrison from South Park working for the RIAA saying, or not Mr. Garrison, the psychiatrist. Now, drugs are bad, okay? Mr. Mackey, okay?
Yeah, man, you may have just sunk our entire cause with that statement.
The drugs are good?
Well, that one
I'm not
too,
advocating drugs, just people love them.
No, that the internet is like drugs in any way. You've just turned off half a billion people.
Oh. Now the internet.
No, the point.
Okay.
The point
Bitcoin's
well made.
Bad, okay.
The point is well made. I mean, Pipe Man is correct. They can try to clamp down on the internet all they want. It doesn't really matter. More so, I think, for like the people in this call right now and people like us who actually even know what a mesh network is. You know, I mean, there are people who don't even understand. I mean, the internet to so many people is Facebook, you know. I mean, there's just so many other ways to connect with each other than you know, Facebook. There's just not going to be a way for them to just to shut down the internet. There's too much technology out there at this point, and it will spread, and it's not going to be something that a government can control, because like Coronomial says, the governments are incompetent anyway, so it doesn't matter.
And the point about it is that people already know what they can do with the internet, so it's a lot more difficult taking something away once people know what they can do with it.
Yeah.
Think a lot of people know what they can do with the internet. We know what we can do with the internet, but my grandma has no idea.
Yeah, well, we're a lot of people. We're anonymous. We're legion, right?
I don't believe we are.
I don't believe I'm anonymous. Bob, of course, is. But the point to remember is if suddenly Facebook is taken offline tomorrow, a lot of people will be annoyed about that.
Yeah, I think the idea that we are a lot of people over people on the internet who are outraged at GoDaddy's position in SOPA, all wanting to pull away, and it turned out that, from what I can work out, that they lost some users, but not that many. I mean, it was a drop in the ocean, really. It was a short term thing as well. So, we are a minority, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I think we're a not just a minority, but a vast, drastic minority. If the internet somehow went away and we had to build a mesh network, number one, we're talking wireless, because we could not afford enough wires to connect to one another, nor could we hide them in such a way that they'd be secure. So we're talking about a wireless network. And if I look around me where I live, for people with the wherewithal and a reason to connect a wireless network, a mesh network, I don't think I could hit any of them with the amount of broadcast strength that's in my router. I don't see a thing like that happening. I think at this point it's a dream. Maybe in a generation or two, but not
yeah, now. But Pokey, what I'm just saying now is if that Chaos Computer Club mesh network, and it's a if and the big knife killed the devil, as my mother's very fond of saying, but if you did have a mobile network that is not, it's right above you, clear line of sight, and that you're going to be able to broadcast to this, then, you know, it's going to be only 2 kilometers away from you directly above, and you'll be able to reach it with a low-powered transmitter. Then you have internet everywhere in the world. Problem solved.
But if they don't want you to have it, there are few enough of us that would do that, that they would have no problem triangulating those signals in a matter of days.
No, because those things, whoops, sorry, lost my trail of thought there.
Well, Pokey, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have said that a billion people are going to be on the internet either. You'd have said that's not ever going to happen. Internet is only for DARPA or whatever and universities. It'll never get big. There's just not enough people out there with computers or the know-how to get online. And even probably as recent as, like, I don't know, maybe 10 years, when people were doing, like, dial-up or whatever, you'd probably still have thought, yeah, this internet's still, there's a big barrier to entry. You have to know all this stuff. It's just not going to happen. But now everyone's on the internet. You know, I mean, it's something that's going to, yeah, maybe if the internet went away today, we wouldn't be ready with our magical mesh network to suddenly solve the problem. But it's going to grow. You know, it's going to develop.
I always like to take my analogies to their bitter conclusion. So, I mean, I would say that, you know, certain drugs like methamphetamines or ecstasy are really, really hard to make. But, you know, at some point, some dude can make it in a bathroom at the local Target. You know, people get that good at making things they really, really want.
Yeah.
The point is, not everybody that is a drug addict needs to know how to do that. They just need to know somebody who does. And
okay,
that's to make that correlation. It doesn't matter that there aren't that many people that know how to do it. It's just that there are people everywhere that do know how to do it, and those are the people that the people who really want to get on the internet are going to go to.
There aren't that many people using computers very well, but they all have friends who know how to work them. You know, I mean, that's where we come in, right? We're the reason our family and friends even know how to get to Facebook in the first place.
It's a fair point, but where your drug analogy breaks down is that people aren't standing out in the street screaming, "I'm high," and getting away with it. If you're setting up a wireless mesh network, you're doing exactly that. You have a piece of equipment that is broadcasting a signal, and that's its whole point.
But you're assuming that that's something that you're not going to be allowed to do. You're perfectly allowed to do that, and people like the librarians of this country would come out and stand, librarians of any country in particular, would come out and stand up for you, because it's a freedom of speech effort. And if you're unhappy with the service provided by your ISP, you decide to go to Skynet or whoever to give you your service. And it just so happens Skynet uses more encryption because they know what's going on. And it can't be monitored by your local government because it's operated in a distributed fashion in different territories, not under control of your government. Okay?
Yeah.
It's perfectly legal to do. Sorry, I need to get the kids up and do the Happy New Year thing. So I'd like to wish you all Happy New Year. But before I go, episode 837, I did an interview with Jürgen Schinker, who does the Open Wireless Network in Deptford in London. It's one of the Odd Camp interviews where they have a cheap router and they do wireless mesh networks to people for £30, and nobody knows how it works, but it's just beautifully magic. It's already there.
Happy New Year, Ken.
Happy New Year, folks. I'll be on afterwards and for a little while at least. Okay, goodbye.
Happy New Year, Ken. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
I would say that, you know, any router right now is capable of mesh networking, any wireless router, and that there are places where you're in a rural area and it would be difficult to get to other people. But I live in a townhouse community, but there's 35 wireless access range of my, you know, whatever my device is at the time. And that in areas like where I live, mesh networks would work brilliantly. And there would be so many routers that, you know, how would you pin it down to one? The noise in that area is ridiculous.
I'm going to throw a little fly in the ointment of this idea that that you could suddenly have an alternate ISP, essentially, which is something that's out with government control or corporate control or whatever you want to call it, the traditional system that we have just now, where you could actually get online somehow and communicate without government stepping in and monitoring with their various partners and whatever. And that is that all the government need to do, any government around the world, any government, all they need to say, the people using this are all terrorists and paedophiles, therefore it's in the national security interest to shoot down any of these whatever satellites, anything that's actually taking the signal, so that you've got nothing to connect to unless you go through these systems. And then they paint the picture of, well, if you want to avoid the traditional ISPs, you've got something to hide. What have you got to hide? You should be arrested. So a little fly in the ointment there. It's a nice idea, but realistically, given the lengths that various governments and corporations are going to monitor and to get different abilities, different legal rights to do all sorts of things, there's no way they're going to allow something that's out with their control, out with their monitoring, to become established. There's just no way it's going to happen.
You guys are using the same arguments that people would have used against both the internet and Linux and all these different things that have come about, that yes, they're out of government control, they're out of corporate control, and yet they were. Linux certainly is. I mean, but it has spread to a pretty good, a healthy market. So, I mean, it's not impossible just because it can't be done tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree. I think you need to maybe chillax a bit and not believe in all the FUD going around.
Well, I think basically it's because, I'm working under the assumption that we're talking about a mesh network being put in place because it's needed, because the internet as it is outlawed. And I'm talking about how it would be difficult to get around law enforcement of such a thing, not the fact that, yes, today we could put it together. We do have tech to put it together today. I don't think we have enough people to do it. But if it were to become outlawed, I don't think we could bring people into the fold to help with it.
Yeah, I think a more legitimate approach might be encryption rather than some alternate network. The mesh network, wasn't that what the OLPC thing was good at doing, apparently?
Yeah, I believe it was.
That's the first place I heard about mesh networking, for sure.
Yeah, me too.
I remember, I think it was Tux Radar, their show, one of their tasks they had, the idea of, or the challenge they set themselves, was creating a mesh network from their offices to whatever pub it was, and they were able to record part of the show in the pub. And connecting through the various dots, little laptops and netbooks and stuff like that. I don't know how well it went. I do know that I recorded a couple of episodes from the pub, but I think they were all actually in the pub at the time, which doesn't really count.
Yeah, I don't know if I know how that one ended.
The other point I was going to make is that, Napster was a big deal, and there was a lot of lawsuits and a lot of anger and a lot of battling over that they were able to make downloading music illegally so easy. And they fought it. Let's see, Napster's, the lawsuits were in, what, 98? So yeah, here I said, burgeoning on 2012. So 14 years of legislation and fighting and a lot of money thrown behind it. And I bet in less than 5 minutes I could find any MP3 I ever wanted to get for free.
Yeah.
So to say that they're going to successfully take down the internet is when they're not even able to prevent you from finding a single MP3 is, I don't know how much I stay up at night worrying about it.
I think a lot of the people that are deciding these laws are being told by lobbyists and large amounts of money how the internet works, and it's not how the internet works, but...
Yeah, I totally agree. And it doesn't end at the internet. I mean, the fact of the matter is the issue, especially for the last couple of years, everybody all around the world knows that they don't have a say and that the corporations run and everything. And I mean, that's the problem. The problem isn't that the government wants to take down the internet to stop crime. It's that the government is being told to stop the internet. That's what's going on.
It's all just a series of tubes anyways.
I'll say.
Well, when all these laws come down, we'll just start up our own darknet, have our own tubes.
Yeah, and that's kind of where we were, where the conversation was just before you popped in, was that, my point was that it would have to be a wireless network, which would be real easy to shut down if that were their true intention, just because you're broadcasting. So it's, I hope this crap doesn't pass, that's all.
Same here. It's easy to shut down. I would say yes, it is easy to shut down a node in the network. Really easy. It would be really difficult to walk into a neighborhood that has 1,000 nodes running and shut them all down. You know what I mean? You could easily go to any one of their houses and say, yeah, you need to take that down. And they probably would, but overall, it wouldn't affect the network much until the next day when they plug another $15 router in and they're good to go.
Yeah, in my dystopian future, they don't knock on your door and ask you to take it down. It's jackbooted thugs with a battering ram.
Yeah, and that's how that's how drugs are handled now. I don't want to go back to that analogy or keep beating it, but I mean, that's literally how it's handled now. If they suspect you of having illegal drugs, they will kick your door down and beat you up. But there's probably 10 meth labs within walking distance of my house. I think the internet is that good. I think the internet and most people in the world are either trying to get on the internet or are already on the internet, and there's nothing really that could stop them. I mean, it's bringing down governments now. It's not necessarily setting up governments yet, but I think that at some point it becomes that no matter how much you really, really want drugs to go away or the internet to go away, there's nothing you can do.
I don't know if it's as much about more people are coming on to the internet as such. I think it's just as time goes by, things change. So when I was at school, we did a computer studies class. We were the kind of pioneers, the first year to get it. Now, if you go to school, you've got everyone, computers are everywhere. So, I mean, I grew up in a house where we didn't have a computer. We had a VIC-20, but that's kind of not really the point. Now kids grow up with multi-channel satellite television and DVD players and movies on demand and smartphones and games consoles and whatever. So as time goes by, the people who grew up without technology, who this is new to, I mean, you look around various workplaces, you've got people who left school before computers hit the mainstream, so they don't really have any computer skills. They know what they need to do with a computer, but that's really about it. They're kind of reluctant to learn, whereas now kids are going through and they're zipping through doing all sorts of things. I mean, the sort of stereotypical example is how to set the video recorder. Well, you ask the kids how to do it. So I think the more people that either it's just aging, basically, as people die off or as people retire and they just sort of lose interest compared to the number of people who grow up and the internet is the norm for them, smartphones is the norm, tablets is the norm, computers is the norm, and they just replace the people who for that's not the norm, if that makes sense.
I hate to keep disagreeing with you, Thistleweb, because it sounds like I'm just disagreeing with you to be mean. But I'm not seeing that in people coming out of the schools, at least here in the States. I'm seeing people who know how to sign on to, again, Facebook and Gmail. And like, if I ask them to do anything remotely, just some of the most basic things on the computer, they sit there and stare at me. And it's really quite disconcerting, because I kept thinking, okay, this new crop of people, they're gonna really know computers now, and they don't know anything. I don't know what they're getting taught.
Totally agree with you. Our 14-year-old daughter learns nothing about computers at school. And in fact, it's quite shocking when we ask her to set things up at home. She's clueless. She still uses Windows.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I really had expected more, to be honest.
It's getting worse. You know, you've got, these days, computers are not being sold as computers as we know. You know, they're being sold as consumer devices. So things like, you know, your iPad, probably the hottest thing on the shelves this Christmas was the iPad. And it's not a computer, it's a consumer device. You know, you consume content through it. You don't output content, you know, as we do on, you know.
Yeah, it's a useless device.
My example of this that I would point to is, how many people do you meet in a day that would understand, like, just talking to somebody about formatting a hard drive and having to explain to somebody what formatting a hard drive is and getting them to understand that is 20 minutes of your life. And that's every person you meet, with rare exception.
Most people would have no reason to format their hard drive, though.
I disagree. Most people are on Windows.
But they don't know that they needed to format their hard drive. Because they run Windows.
Joke. I got the joke, Pokey.
Yeah, no, you've got a good point. I understand what you're saying.
I was going to say, maybe I should sort of qualify that a little bit. It's not about knowing computers. That wasn't what I was getting at. It was the fact that computers are the norm where, I mean, certainly when I grew up, we didn't have a computer until I was an adult, a proper computer. And even then, it was Windows 98, and it wasn't connected to the internet because it was too expensive to get on the internet. So I didn't actually get onto the internet until I had XP. But, I mean, now kids, I mean, I only had four channels when I was growing up as well on TV. Now kids have got so much more technology around about them that, I mean, you would expect them to be able to jump to various devices, like an iPad, an Android tablet, a smartphone, a computer, whatever, and be able to jump straight in there, even although they're only doing basic tasks, even although they're only looking to check their email or go on Facebook or something. They're not techno cautious, if you like, whereas like the older generation who never had computers and who are wary that if they press the letter T that the thing explodes, type of thing. That was more what I was getting at, rather than learning advanced sort of skills.
Well, I think that what they're teaching, or I guess it's the, does everybody need to reinvent the wheel? Does every kid need to know everything about how a computer or a network works? Should we be, should they be solving the problems we haven't solved yet, or learning about the problems that we already have? And I'd say that also with devices is that, you know, when I first got on the internet, it was the one computer in our house, and it connected to the internet over dial-up. And then, you know, you only had so many minutes that you could be on the internet, and then you got off. And I agree that many people don't know how the internet works, or but we're not no longer talking about just signing into Facebook or just logging into the internet. We're talking about people's televisions, smart TVs. You know, we're talking about their Xbox Live accounts won't work, and their phone won't work, and that iPad won't work. And people rely on networks in a transparent way where it isn't just, you know, a desktop computer and you connect to the internet. It's I have three Roku and an Xbox, and my daughter has a Nook tablet, and I have a Kindle Fire, and we have four Android phones, and they all connect to the internet. And if all of a sudden people connect in more transparent ways. And I think that, yeah, if you took it away even a little bit, people who didn't know would suddenly start seeking out the information, and it would be there because, like, Hacker Public Radio exists because the information's out there. People just have to start. They're just not interested in it now. If you make it a little harder, like you say you can't get to Twitter today because there was a SOPA takedown of Twitter, you know, all of a sudden people get real smart. They go to Google and they start reading tutorials, and they start figuring stuff out, you know.
You're right. A classic example of that has been StatusNet with Identica. You know, how many people in their droves left Identica once, you know, with the upgrade, it went offline for 4 or 5 days or weeks even. Same with the BlackBerry network. When that crashed, the public outcry was horrendous.
You know, speaking of reinventing the wheel, I was trying to formulate this into a funny sounding dent of 140 characters, but it was too difficult. So I figured, just as a joke, imagine the political stance if the makers of the Raspberry Pi actually marketed it as a patent infringement package, patent infringement kit, whereby if you actually start to invent anything, you're going to infringe someone's patents somewhere. And if you, that's just the long and short of it. It's how bad the patent system's getting. If you actually lift a finger to do anything, you're infringing on someone's patents.
We're kind of back into territory that somebody was talking about earlier, and I was out of the room, and I didn't get a chance to make the point. But somebody mentioned that that you don't need to know how to fix a car to drive a car, and use that as an analogy for computers. But you know, I kind of think that that's not exactly right, because I think that the more you know about cars, the better of a driver you can be, because you'll understand how things work and how physics reacts on that. The more that you know about computers, and the more you know about the internet, real limitation to work within to get that stuff done.
Yeah, I think that goes so far. I would go as far as to say it's important for the average user to understand basic maintenance of a technology. Because sticking to the car analogy, basic maintenance of the car, not necessarily how it works, but how to keep it, how not to do stupid things like put diesel in it while it's a petrol car, that type of thing. Same with computers. I mean, the amount of people who I see who with a USB thumb drive, and they'll just pull out the thumb drive, and I'm like, no, unmount it first. And by the time I get the words out of my mouth, it's already out of the drive. I'm like, no, why did you do that? Why? Don't do that. Please don't do that. Don't do that again. And I've got to educate them. So you unmount it first. You don't just whip it out of the drive. So people don't know any better. So I think there's basic maintenance thing that really should be general school knowledge. I don't know. Knowledge. Hey, Lawson Bronx. It should be knowledge that people, basic
can
maintenance.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay, I can't hear Thistleweb at all. I can hear him on the stream, but not hear him mumble.
I'm not sure what to do about that.
Is he using Kelt or the Speaks codec, I wonder?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thistleweb, can you check your codec and make sure that your compression's low enough that it's using the Speaks codec, please?
If he's using Kelt now and changes it to Speaks, he will have to restart Mumble. Just FYI, Thistleweb.
Yeah, no worries. I think it might be LB Speaks.
Klaatu, the Celt in SBO package, that's the wrong one, right?
Correct, yeah. That's how we found out about this, actually, on a podcast I was doing with Pokey and Resno, and I wasn't being able to hear them.
Yeah, I think it's off by one, like, you know, 0.01 or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have to redo that at some point, not today.
Yeah, that's why we decided to use Speaks for everyone today.
Yeah, so ThistleWeb, I think it's a fairly good analogy. If you're driving a car, you have to know what kind of fuel to put in the car. You have to be able to check your oil. If you can't do that, then you have to do it for you or it's going to break. And I think the same thing is true of computers. You see it all the time with Windows computers. Somebody has to defrag that hard drive or the computer's going to slow down. Somebody has to put, maintain the viruses and take care of that, or it's going to break down. On the internet, you have to know how to encrypt your stuff or somebody's going to steal your credit card number. I think it's a very appropriate analogy, and the more you know it, the better you're going to be at it.
I think there are some differences. I mean, to devil's advocate a bit, you know.
Well, yeah, any analogy would break down, but yeah, let's hear them.
No. I'm not trying to attack the analogy, just that, technology's job is it the job for people to adapt to technology or to technology to adapt to people? And that's, you know, I get that a thumb drive is the existence now, but at some point, the next wave of technology is going to solve that with something that doesn't interact that way, you know, that somebody can yank it out. You know, there was a point when, you know, the idea of something being hot swappable, where you could plug in a USB device and it would pop up without you having to restart your machine, was like a huge deal where people, you know, that the next wave of technology should probably adapt to the way people are than people adapting to the way the technology is.
People have been saying that the longest time, though. I mean, you know, I don't know how many times I've heard that.
Yeah, I don't know that it meets reality. It's more of a philosophical argument, but.
No, I think it does meet reality, and it doesn't even break the analogy, because you've got cars that can park themselves now because people can't parallel park.
Computers might make it.
Well, you know, I'm a big believer that the tech ought to do all that stuff for people. You know, I don't think people should have to parallel park, you know, because some people are really good at it and some people are going to suck, like me, you know, and it doesn't mean I'm a bad person or that I shouldn't be allowed to travel anywhere.
I think the people, I mean, I'm excited about a car that can drive itself because I don't want to drive anymore, you know. I don't want to do that. I've got other things I want to do.
I know exactly what you mean. I mean, you know, but, you know, the car analogy is I think applies to computers too. In a lot of people in, you know, kind of geek areas, they're of the opinion that the average user shouldn't be allowed on the internet because they do stupid things. You know, people should have the right to do whatever the hell they want. You know, if the internet is too damn dangerous or complex, that means that the tools we're using are wrong for the average user.
Now, that's where the lulls, man. Bill, what were you going to say?
No, sorry. The conversation moved on. It's all right.
You can move it back. We got a lot of time to fill, buddy.
Yeah, right.
No, I was just going to make...
I can't hear Bill at all.
Oh, me either, huh? I was just going to say, computers might get there where the average user, it's doing everything they want. I don't think they're going to be the computers that
I'm
we want to use.
I'm challenged.
Hey, Bill. You're all right, mate.
Hello, Phil.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
We can
that
hear
when...
you fine, Bill. It's just Bronx.
It might be you lost in Bronx.
I am the guy who wants to drive, and I am the guy who wants to format my own hard drives.
I'm not saying that I don't want to know how to drive. I just don't, like, as far as day in and day out, you know, I'm coming off, they're moving my office to 1.3 miles away from my house. But for 6 years, I've been making a 36-mile each-way commute. And to say that if I'm going to have to make that kind of a commute in order to, you know, make the economics of my family work, then... not driving and being able to, say, read a newspaper in the morning instead of having to drive sounds pretty appealing to me. And that's what I mean. I mean, that's an idea of technology is meeting me, not me meeting technology.
Well, when I moved here to Arizona from New York City, I mean, I took the train everywhere. You get really, really used to, you know, having a morning coffee and reading or writing. I had a handheld thing at that time that I was, you know, doing lots of writing and reading on. You get so used to that. And when I came out here, man, all of that went away. So those are dead hours for me, driving on the road out here.
Yeah, I enjoy my morning commute to work. I drive 36 miles each way.
I enjoyed the first year, maybe.
It gives me time to wake up in the morning and time to unwind from work before I get home and see the family again. And I get a chance to sing in the car.
I guess the fact that, you know, I've had a year where I had my first car accident that I've ever been in, and then my wife was involved in two. And it gets to the point where I'm just nervous driving. Like I do so much of it that at some point I realize how much is out of my control when I do it. And I would rather sit and read a book and feel safe than feel like, you know, if I get a cold, I'm a little groggy, but I still have to make that 36-mile commute. And that's how my accident happened. You know, I'd had a cold, but couldn't afford to miss work and had taken some cold medicine and it didn't quite wear off right. And ended up rear-ending somebody. And it wasn't, nobody got hurt or anything, but it's those kind of things that, like, I want technology to get around that, where I don't want a car that gets tired, you know, that feels groggy or gets a cold. I want to be able to make it to work safely, regardless of how I feel.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I think Becky would enjoy her commute each morning if, you know, she'd enjoy it just as much as if, you know, if she wasn't driving. If the car was driving itself, she'd probably still enjoy it just as much, just because, you know, it's the time. I think she enjoys the time to herself as opposed to the actual driving of the car.
Hi guys, this is Ken, just going to sign off now. Wish you all a happy new year, and I want to thank everybody for putting this on, and I look forward to listening to the rest of the show on the stream whenever it's out.
See you, Ken. Happy new year, mate.
Happy new year, everyone.
Yeah, happy new year, Ken.
Love you, brother.
Yeah, cheers.
All right, since nobody's talking, I want to take this opportunity in the lull in the conversation to save and restart a new bit of recording, so just hang on for a minute, please.
Yeah, I'm trying to compile the latest Kelt and install it, so I might jump off here at any time. So
I was going to say something really profound, but I guess I'll wait.
No, go ahead. I'm recording again. That's all it took.
Oh, I forgot what it was.
Oh, that's shoot. I'm sorry.
No, I'm joking. It was all elaborate ruse.
I was going to say that I'd like to hear Becky sing.
Oh, no.
If the latency wasn't so bad, I'd play guitar and she could sing.
Yeah, that would work great. Oh, speaking of latency, I did want to mention, if anybody is listening to the stream and they're connected directly to the OSMP stream, could you please hop off of that and hop onto one of the streams that are posted on HPR? Because we are getting some latency here, and I'm pretty sure it's due to bandwidth because we've got so many people hit in the primary stream, and could head over to HPR.
I mean, I've got the stats up for it. I hadn't noticed anything other than, you know, I can check again, but I don't think I've got anybody connected to my stream other than, yeah, I just have three. So, and I think there's three streams up. So I think that's those three streams. I don't think anybody's
connected. Okay, I'm back.
So if we're getting problems, there's probably too many people on the mumble server.
Take it back.
Then okay,
it was a wild guess anyway, being on the server and listening and you weren't intending on talking, then I'd ask you to hit the stream instead. Listen to the stream instead is what I meant.
There's 19 people listening on the Tilt stream. Hooray.
Sweet.
That's almost my whole audience for GNU World Order.
That's twice as many that usually listen.
Yeah.
So if we're having a lull, I have a question about recording HPRs, if anybody wants to answer.
Why, sure.
How are you guys converting into speaks? I can't really find an easy way to do that. I tried it with FFmpeg, and it loses all the ID3 data.
Speaks ENC, all one word, speaks encoder, speaks ENC. That's how I do it personally. I don't know how other people do it. I think Ken, actually, though, he's got a script on the server side that will do that for you if you don't... If you record a show, just send him like the AUG or the FLAC version, and I'm pretty sure that their script will do the speaks conversion for you. But if you want to do it yourself, I just use speaks ENC.
Okay, thanks. I'll look at that. I have one ready to put up to HPR, but it's just AUG and MP3. But
oh yeah, no, just send that. They'll do the conversion server side as well. They say it's pretty simple. I don't even bother myself. I just upload the AUG version and let them do the rest.
Yeah, that's all I ever do.
Okay, nice. Thanks.
I'm going to say the same. I never upload a Speaks version, and I believe it's all automated.
Speaks. I was going to say Speaks Inc. Is part of the big Speaks package. I remember on some distribution I pulled Speaks, and it just got just the codec itself. But if you get the whole thing, I think maybe possibly Speaks Utils or something like that. That should have a whole bunch of other stuff.
All right, thanks. I'll check it. That was my last stumbling block, but I'll check into that. Thanks.
Are you saying that HPR If you want the speak or the OGG file, it takes the MP3 and re-encodes it as speaks or OGG.
Yes. You mean if someone only sends a speaks file?
No, I'm asking. You said that HPR takes care of all the encoding.
Yeah.
So if you want a speaks file, does that mean they're taking the MP3 file and encoding a speaks from it on the fly?
Yes, from lossy to lossy.
Awesome.
Not on the fly, but they do it.
That's how we roll.
Before they post.
Right, okay, no problem. But if you wanted to, you can cut a speaks and an OGG from your original and give that to them.
Indeed.
All right, I was under the impression that I had to, if I wanted all three, I had to push all three up, but it sounds like I should be set as I am.
Yeah.
So what's our next subject then, guys?
Say, that was a good question.
I could play a tune until you figure it out.
Maybe.
You're dying to play a tune,
highlights.
Aren't you?
Well,
say it again, Kronomial?
It's been 6 hours, you know.
So maybe we could have a round table question of what's been your highlight of 2011?
As far as like shows or like just personally?
Well, shows personally, you know, tech related.
Would you start us off?
I want to go first. Ladies first.
Ladies first.
Google Plus. Awesome.
Really?
Really.
Yeah, I enjoyed Google Plus a lot.
I hear past tense out of you, man. What was so appealing to you?
For me, it's certainly filled a void once Identikit and StatusNet crashed when they did the upgrade. The lack of 140 limit, that appeals too. And also, it's a nice techie crowd. My friends and family tend to be on Facebook, but my techie friends are all on Google+, and I can talk differently there.
That's interesting.
You nailed it on the head, why I like it.
Huh. I guess I just IRC for that.
Yeah, I've got no use for Google Plus myself.
That would be true if I, you know, up until I had an Android phone, I would say that, you know, there was computer time and not computer time. And that, you know, once I got a phone, all time is computer time. And I want to, you know, I can't be on IRC. I mean, I can be on IRC on my phone, but that doesn't really meet a lifestyle. But I can post up a conversation and kind of get updates, and it kind of all works really nicely without me, you know, interrupting my day or my flow or the way I'm doing things. And yet still carry on some really cool conversation, you know.
People, just before I start.
And who's next?
Yeah, I was going to say, who can actually hear me? Is my sound okay? It seems to be an okay outside, but it's okay in here.
I can hear you.
I hear you.
Yeah, I can hear you too.
Yeah, I hear you.
Right, that's... yeah, I think Google Plus was one of these things that was kind of Facebook, but not really Facebook. I mean, it's still Google, but with the circles, it's kind of... it's more sort of what Facebook should have been and could have been, but wasn't. And I think that's maybe why people like it.
I don't know why, but I'm very reluctant to do the Google Plus. It's very scared of a Google takeover. It seems like it's coming.
Yeah, I'm avoiding Google Plus like I avoid most everything from Google. So.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about Google, to be fair. I think there's, you know, I think it's a numbers game. There's far too many users out there for, you know, for me to be worried about what I'm doing.
Oh, that's where batch processing comes in, my friend.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty lax about things like that.
So for the people who are using Google Plus and are getting some value out of it, I'll ask it again. How do you deal with the inundation of, like, friend requests or circle requests, as they call them? How do you deal with that?
I ignore them if I don't know them.
Yeah, that's all there is to it.
Absolutely.
No, it doesn't quite work like that, because you don't get friend requests with Google Plus. People can, unlike Facebook, where, you know, people will request to be your friend, in Google Plus, you know, they will just follow you. So it's similar to Identikit in that respect, and, you know, similar to Twitter as well. So
they just add you to their circle. Get a notification that say that someone. You know, so like Thistleweb. Yeah, Thistleweb has added me to his circle. If I don't want to follow Thistleweb back, I don't add him into my circle.
Yeah, I'm looking at my circles right now. I have 104 people in my circles, and I'm in 434 circles. So.
Yeah, I've got a similar thing like that going on. There's like several hundred people following me. I don't know how the heck they got my name, but yeah, I'm not following that many people, but my inbox is just pull every day of you know, notifications, so-and-so is following you. Maybe I just need to turn off notifications.
I mean, certainly for me, the same for me is because obviously, you know, I am married to Philip, you know, the developer of Crunchbang. Also the novelty fact that I'm a lady, you know, who happens to post as well. So I do get a little bit of sort of some element of fan following going on. But if I don't know them in real life or not spoken to them online, then I, you know, I choose not to follow them back.
Yeah, same with me. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, it's somewhere between Facebook and Twitter in that, you know, people, I like to post things publicly, but that doesn't mean that I want to get deluged with people I don't know saying things, you know, but I like that they engage in conversation. I post something, you know, and I get to hear from people that I don't necessarily know personally, but, you know, that doesn't mean that every time they post something, I want to, you know, I can't read 434 people's posts, you know, I would just feel overwhelmed.
So this is a question for, I mean, I don't use Google, so I've resisted Google Plus, I've resisted Diaspora, and lots of other things. I primarily use Identica. So this is a question for everyone who uses Google Plus. How do you actually interact with it and have conversations back and forth with people on that? Because what I consider Identica for is a little icon in the status bar. The status tray, the system tray even, in my case it's HeyBuddy, where I can just, if I have some thought, I can randomly just shoot it out. Or if I come across some link, I can just shoot it out and have conversations back and forth. I don't want to be keeping going back to open a web browser and going to any site, regardless, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, Identica, Google+, whatever. So how is it you actually deal with that? Is it, do you just sort of go back every sort of 10 minutes and check the web page to see if there's updates or and post back and forth? Or do you have the web browser open all the time and just have a tab? How do you actually deal with Google Plus?
Yes,
I don't anymore. It was overwhelming. I bailed on it.
I mean, most of my interaction with it is I will post something using the web browser. Google gives you notifications and updates in any of their Google products. So I usually have Gmail open anyways, and you get Google Plus notifications in there. And then I also use the Android app when I'm moving around. I get notifications on there too.
That'd be the same for me as well. But I'm probably not posting on the same volume that you post through HeyBuddy Thistleweb.
So, right, does anyone know of an application like HeyBuddy, or like any client really, just a client in general, that actually does Google Plus? That fantastic. That does Facebook, but that doesn't seem to do Google Plus. What does?
You've got Firefox, Google Chrome, Chromium, Safari.
I walked out of that one again.
I guess the point is, though, that I like the web interface and the mobile apps so much that I haven't really needed another client. So, I mean, you kind of stumped me completely on that question, because I don't know.
That's a fair point. I mean, if the internet is the application that works best, then you can use the internet to do that.
Yeah, certainly. I've found recently that constant information overload has thwarted me to do and prevented me from doing so many things. That's why I tend to either, I mean, recently I've just sort of switched off from a lot of it. So now I've only got Identica open through HeyBuddy. And I sometimes come into IRC through XChat. But even that, XChat sitting as an X in the system tray. And I'm trying to sort of think, right, would it be possible to do that with Google Plus without having a web browser open, without having the constant distraction there all the time of conversations going back and forth, you know?
I mean, fair enough. During my work day, I usually don't interact much on Google Plus. You know, it's usually after work, you know, during my commute or those kind of things. So, I mean, I think it's reasonable that because you have circles and you can put people in different circles that you can manage the deluge a little better. Like, it's kind of, when I first started listening to podcasts, I felt like every podcast in my feed I wanted to listen to. And at some point you come to the realization that, you know, you don't read every article in the newspaper or in a magazine. You know, I don't need to listen to every show that comes across the feed. And the same with Google Reader. You know, I'm heavy into that. I don't need to read everything. You know, I sort and deal with that stuff. And I like that I can do the same really easily in the Google Plus app, that I have my family, my friends, the OSMP listeners, you know, the kind of core group that we have there, I have them in their own feed. And then, you know, when I want to see what they're doing, I click that and I can read that and interact with that. But if not, it's just a stream that passes me by. And I like that I can go back and just see what these people are saying without putting a lot of effort into it. So, you know, it's one click.
It's also very much in the now. I mean, I don't scroll all the way back through my timeline to see what people have said. You know, I go on it, I read what's available on my page. If anything's of interest to comment on, it gets commented. If not, you know, I go about my business.
Yeah, it's a conversation when you want to have the conversation.
Absolutely.
I want to commend Klaatu. He just, while we were having this conversation, built a Slack build of the Celt version that we're all using.
No, I didn't. No.
Oh, you didn't build that? You just found it?
No. Yeah. It's just the historical one. But thank you for commending my internet skills for finding it.
It sounds like something you would do, though. It seemed plausible when he said.
Yeah, I mean, I've built Slack builds before, so yeah, it's not out. It's not a crazy idea. But no, I can't take credit for it.
No, and your tech support, I guess, leanings would have me believe that you could go do that for somebody.
You underestimate my laziness, I think.
Yeah, I do. I know what you do.
We are techie because we are lazy.
Exactly.
We know how this stuff works so that we cannot have to do it as much.
You know, there was some story on, I think it was The Guardian today, about Luddites and about how they hate the technology, the gradual progress of technology. And I'm thinking, well, technology, it loses some jobs because machines can do them easier and better and more efficient, but it creates others, so the jobs just move. I've lost my train of thought there. As my typing goes, I'm a bit inebriated at the moment, so my typing's a little bit off. I do apologize.
I would say that, you know, you can say in certain ways that, yeah, technology creates problems that didn't exist before. You know, like a car, for example, there wasn't car crashes and stuff like that before the car existed. But I think as a whole, as technology improves, we do have more and more leisure time. You know, there was a point when, you know, people didn't have the time to sit down and read a magazine. You worked in a field, you know, 18 hours a day, and that was it. So every year, my leisure time has increased in some way. You know, there was a time when I commuted in a car and I didn't have anything to do during that commute because it was dark, so I couldn't read without having a book light, and I didn't have a book light, so I would just sit and stare out the window. And now, you know, if I feel like listening to a podcast, I do that. If I feel like reading a book, I do that. If I feel, you know, if I feel like cruising around and talking to friends on the internet, I do that. And that even of its in and of itself to me is an increase in my leisure time. And I think that technology doesn't necessarily just create more problems.
Well, technology rises to do 5 times the output of what you had been doing before. Then the targets your employer sets for you suddenly reflect that. So you now have to work just as hard as you did before. To get 5 times the output to meet the targets. So it's just things change. It's not good or bad. It's just progress. Things change.
You should work smarter, not hard.
Yeah, and that goes for technology itself, too. I mean, I think that technology has the potential to
quantity,
make things...
not quality. Not that.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of bad technology sometimes, too. I mean, like the iPad, for instance. You know, I mean, it's not a given that technology is going to be better, but there is a potential for it to make things a lot better.
I like technology. Hey, I'm the only one recording now. If anybody else was intentionally making a backup, your recording stopped.
Yeah, I had quit mine because I kept going back out into the lobby to help people figure out Mumble. So I think my recording was probably dropping out anyway, but I'll stay in here for a while and record.
Oh, right, got it.
I had to stop recording at about 40 gig.
Wow. Don't you use what? Don't Flack, you use Flack? I know. I mean,
it,
did,
it didn't occur to me when I started the recording, and then I didn't want to stop it, but then the drive it was filled up, so I stopped.
I tested last night with Flack, and I think I had about 500 megabytes maybe for an hour and a half, you know, full of audio. Now, I don't know if that goes up with more people.
It does, because each when you do multi-track, each one is their own file.
Yeah.
And they're all of equal size. So if I, you know, at 3.5 hours, it was 1.5 gig per person. And I think I had 15 different recordings.
It's equal size even if they're silent?
Yeah, because, you know,
It's like, still recording.
Yeah, it's still recording.
Yeah, I know, but it's compressed, and I would think that if there's zero audio, it could just say from here to here.
You're saying with the FLAC. Mine was all wave, and if I was thinking, I would have just done AUG and just called it good, but I didn't do
That's what I'm doing, yeah. I'm just doing AUG.
Yeah, but since you mentioned Klaatu heading out into the testing room and helping people out, I would like to take this opportunity to again thank everybody who's helped us out with this. All the people running streaming mirrors, Pipe Man for running the server and the original stream, all the people who are calling in and are on the line and contributing to the conversation, and to all the people listening and people helping out in the help people in IRC. It's amazing how many people are working together right now to make this thing good and to make it listenable and pulling together for the community. And you guys are awesome. Every single one of you is great.
You're assuming it's good and listenable.
I'm listening. I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Yeah, okay. Me too. I didn't know what to
expect. Here for 3 hours.
When the idea first popped up, you know, I thought, well, my family never does anything exciting for New Year's. We don't party. My wife doesn't drink. I rarely drink. You know, my kids are too little to stay up. And so I thought, sure. And I didn't know what I expected it to be. But I know that the idea of doing 12 hours worth of show seemed kind of like, well, you know, I don't know what we'll do, but we'll do something. And it all came together, even with, you know, some of the technology that we're using, I've had bad experiences with in the past. And I want to commend that stands on how great the community is and how well they were able to put this together so quickly and have it work so well. We have amazing amount. I mean, I wouldn't have expected this many people to connect just to the Mumble server to talk, you know, and the streams were a little touch and go in the beginning. And I thought, well, we'll see how this goes. But now we're how far in? 6 hours, almost 7 hours in. And I commend everyone that put in any effort on this, because I couldn't have expected it to go better.
Yeah, it's I'm not going to lie to you. I was scared. When I said 12 hours at first, it was almost a joke. And then I realized what I had said and committed to, and I was really frightened and panicking. Then I just kind of thought, well, then we'll just do a roundtable and come what may. And if the community is behind the idea, the community will show up and make it work. If I tried to plan 12 hours of content, I mean, there's no way. I don't think anybody could do that. But just the fact that people are showing up and are given an open mic to speak their mind with their friends, basically, you know, we're all friends as far as I'm concerned. It's it ain't hard to fill 12 hours with just a buddy, you know.
When I heard you say you were going to do a 12-hour live show, my jaw pretty much dropped. I didn't expect it. It's going very well, though, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's basically my point, is I couldn't do a 12-hour show. There's no way. I have a hard time doing two. But we can do indefinite shows. I mean, just look at what's in the HPR feed. It's almost 900 shows in there. Ken could tell you how many scores of hours worth of content that is. It's in the thousands, if not the tens of thousands of hours.
You know, sorry.
I was just going to say, whilst there's a bit of a lull, can Philip and I say Happy New Year to everyone? We're going to go off in a minute to celebrate New Year here in the UK. And just want to say Happy New Year and hi to Drake and to Bill and to Gordon.
Oh, yeah,
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, and if anybody else has got shout-outs, take time too.
Yeah, Happy New Year. That's quarter to midnight in the UK. So, yeah, Happy New Year.
I'm going to jump off to go eat some dinner, but I'll be back in a little bit.
Cool.
Thank just when we say how well everything's going, everybody jumps out.
Oh, thank you guys so much for coming on. You guys are so great for this.
We will do a show for you, we promise. It might be a very sort of sad version of Mr. and Mrs. Crunchbang, but we will do one.
I want to hear it.
I am subscribed to the feed and would do so twice if I could.
Well, quickly jumping back, my highlight of this year has been the latest respin of Crunchbang. I use it on my netbook, I use it on my laptop. It's long overdue, honest. What a treat. So thank you, Phil.
Good man.
Yeah,
I'll give you that five the next time I see you, mate.
That's all this E runs is Crunchbang, so thanks from me too.
Yeah, me too. If I hadn't started using it in 2010, I would have used that one too.
Not me, I don't use it, but it sounds neat.
You will after this.
It's worth a look, yeah.
I know, right?
Yeah, I found out the hard way when I tried I tried initially installing it on the usual sort of multi-partition thing, and it kept flipping out. It was like, why is this not working? I know this should work. Why is it not working? And eventually I decided, you know what, I don't actually need to multi-boot. Screw it, I'm just going to go for the whole thing. When I did, it was like, oh, I encrypted the LVM. I think I'll go for that. And it was like 8 hours to encrypt the partition on the netbook. But oh my god, I did not realise it was going to be that long. I've only ever installed distros and it's like 25 minutes to back up and running. It was like installing it on the LVM, it's like encrypting was like 12%. What do you mean 12%? It's been like an hour. What do you mean you're sitting at 12%? Is it still working? Hello?
You sound like my computer transcoding audio.
Yeah, really. My laptops are like that. One of my laptops is like that with encoding, just to AUG, you know. It's just like I literally start it and I walk away.
Yeah, I did that last night. I was surprised. I have a fairly new laptop, but all the fans kicked on and it started getting hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of realized that the LVM thing, it takes a long, long, long time. But then again, it's worth it. Anything that's sort of portable, like a netbook, it's kind of advisable just in case it gets nicked, that it is fully encrypted. So it is worth the hassle. It's just I never realized how long it took. Even on the laptop, it was like 15 hours. It was like, what do you mean 15 hours? Just 15 hours just to encrypt it, and then another like 10 minutes or whatever to zip through the rest of the installer.
That's still faster than Windows XP.
Hey, guys. Thanks for all the kind words, and thanks for having us on. I'm going to drop off now, so it's nice talking to you all, and maybe do this again sometime, so thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
Nice. Have a nice New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Wow, Klaatu, you didn't have to hit me once with the fanboy stick.
Oh, about the Crunch Bang?
Yeah, about Crunch Bang while he was in there.
I think it was great. I thought it was fantastic to have them on. I didn't know they were going to show up. I'd heard of, I've obviously read about Crunch Bang, I've heard about it, but I didn't really, I really didn't know that much about it. I think it's fantastic to talk to someone like that.
Oh, I didn't think you were going to hit them. I'm glad you didn't have to hit me. I was gushing. Those guys are great.
I mean, I met the guy who makes my distribution, and I have to say that it took me a while to pull myself together. You know, it's so silly because they're just people, but for some reason you meet the person who's kind of like doing everything behind the scenes and you just get, you get like enamored. It's weird.
If you want a good laugh, think of this. There's people who feel that way about people like Tom Cruise.
Yeah, exactly. And he doesn't even do anything.
Yeah, I noticed that quite quickly when me and Kevy were sorting out Crivens, I realized quite quickly that both of us are Crunch Bang fans. So I was like, right, okay, we need to chill this. We don't want it to be a Crunch Bang loving. We really want to try and make sure it's not like that.
I don't know. I don't think it's so bad, honestly. I mean, why not? If you like the software, don't hide it.
I don't think any of us would. It just works. It's good. It's a good OS.
Yeah, sort of changing the subject a little bit. I remember one of the things, I mean, when you're talking about this sort of 12-hour HPR recording of people just jumping in and it's sort of sharing a moment or sharing a time online with random strangers. I remember during the World Cup, soccer World Cup, being on IRC and you're watching a game and someone in, I don't know, Baltimore is watching the same game, someone in... And Dusseldorf in Germany is watching the same game, and someone in, I don't know, in Tokyo is watching the same game, and you're chatting back and forth in real time, and you're seeing the same thing. Oh, that was a near miss, or that should be a penalty, or whatever it is. And it's a really good experience to sit in a channel. Okay, IRC, it was only text, but it was a sort of similar thing. You're experiencing the same moment with complete strangers, essentially. Which is kind of like what this is, and it's a good thing to have.
Yeah, I think that's a unique thing. I imagine it's a fairly unique thing, really, because of technology. I mean, you can experience the same moments in time with people who shouldn't really be able to share them with you. You know, they might be halfway across the world or whatever, but there is something to that, I think, the shared experience of events. That's really, really cool, very fascinating to me.
Yeah, and somebody, I don't even remember what podcast it was on, but somebody indicated the other day what a good event New Year's Eve is to share that, because basically, unless you're Chinese, you recognize tonight as New Year's Eve or tomorrow as New Year's Day in Crayon's case. So it's not like it's... you know, it's not like it's a religious thing or a political thing. It's a new year tomorrow, and we can all agree on that.
Well, actually, that was a question that I had. I mean, is this scientifically correct? Have we made a full rotation around the sun, like to the exact day and hour, or are we actually offsetting this event? Because that would disturb me a little bit. I mean, I'm just wondering if we are exactly sure that we've made the full rotation or not right now. Like at midnight, have we actually made the full rotation?
Last
year.
Wouldn't that be like midnight Australia time? Well, I think was it Christmas Island, which is just a little bit off Australia, I believe. Excuse me, they're the first.
Oh, are they the? You're dropping out a little bit, Thistleweb.
Yeah, I'm a little bit drunk here. I'm trying not to hiccup while talking, but my bad. I think from here, for what I remember, we've got when you listen to the new year coming through, it's like 4 PM here, and you see the footage coming through of like Sydney in Australia celebrating year. That's their midnight. As we turn like 2 PM type of thing, but I think before that, I think it's like 11 o'clock here in like morning, just before lunchtime. I'm sure that's when like Christmas Island. I'm sure they're the very first on the time zone. So really, it would go 24 hours right around the clock until like there. You know, in my case, 11 AM tomorrow morning.
I guess what I'm asking, I mean, okay, 1 year is Earth in space rotating one full instance around the sun, the sol. So I'm asking, are we sure that we have actually has the Earth actually reached the full rotation today, right now, at someone's midnight? I understand that the Earth is also rotating on its axis. I gather that there's going to be a little bit of offset from that. I'm just wanting to make sure that the rotation is exactly precise. I mean, we're not doing a New Year's a day early or something, are we?
The position of the axis. If you, it's close enough that every 4 years we throw an extra day in and we can call it good.
Okay, just making sure.
But
you said this.
You
said this transcended all religion and everything and had
no
political implication. But I'm just, I just want to make sure that scientifically this is accurate.
I'm just getting over that the world is flat thing, so let's not take these big leaps.
Hey, you've no reason to comment, Santa boy.
Hey, Klaatu, if we let you judge it on Unix time, will you let us have our party and do our drinking?
Yeah, that's fair.
Are you guys actually talking about the flat Earth?
That came up. First we were talking about the rotation, but
there's
can talk about the flatness of the Earth.
Well, something...
Hey, Delta, can you start over again?
Yeah, we didn't hear anything.
Okay, I kind of new to mumble, so I went into the test channel and tried to figure it out, but maybe you're not hearing me okay. How about now?
You sound
fantastic. It was just Luke that you cut out. We could hear, you know, some artifacting from it, which we haven't heard all day. And it was just a fluke, so go ahead.
Okay, great. So what I was saying is that there's this website called the flatearthsociety.org, I think it is. I'm not checking it right now. But they actually have a forum where they're arguing about how the Earth is actually flat, and they have all those justifications for it, and I just think it's really funny.
Do they have too much time on their hands?
I was going to say, you know, that sounds like an offshoot of the Republican Party, but that aside, geeks could be discussing rotations and all this on Christmas Eve, on New Year's Eve. In Scotland, we say, it's almost fucking midnight. Happy New Year. Just drink.
Happy New Year. So are they saying really that honestly believe that the Earth is flat, or just that the euphemism and the analogy is appropriate to the way you should live your life?
No, just like they really think the Earth is flat, at least last time I looked at it. Again, I'm not checking it before I'm talking about it, but
I'm on it right now.
Okay, the last time I looked at it was about 5 years ago probably, and they were actually coming up with all these kind of explanations for how the Earth is flat and how to take an account that we've actually, you know, gone into space, and what about the Earth going around the sun, and they have all these things that they try to explain it away, and it's just really silly.
I find it funny that they're going through all these great lengths and they're using modern technology to to put the word out.
So it's got to be like Pac-Man. You go out one side of the screen, you come back in the other.
See, I want to be both flat earther and a hollow earther and really blow their minds.
Lost in Bronx, it's all turtles all the way down.
So how's everybody doing?
So who better now that I've got a couple beers in me.
Yeah, I was wondering if this show would get increasingly, I don't know, I was going to say more entertaining, but I should be saying sillier as we get closer to that hour.
Who was it that just mentioned turtles? I happened to be looking at the clock at the time.
It was Pokey.
Yeah, that was me.
Discworld. I recognize the reference at Discworld. And I can hear I was going to say thunder. The fireworks going off. That's New Year here, so...
Well, I'm not getting anything. I'm seeing lips light up. I may have to hop in again.
I think it was just unified silence.
No, okay, I lost everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was maybe just a hiccup somewhere.
Yeah, it was the time change.
I don't know what it was. It was government-sponsored fireworks. That's what it was. It was censoring my internet, damn it.
The turtle shifted.
It sure was. It was millions and millions of people, of IRC users, just...
Stone. Yeah, I guess we just had a new year in Cornwall, UK.
Who's in Cornwall?
The new year.
Tim Timmy in Cornwall.
I'm trying to imagine that his flooding of the IRC channel somehow affected the Mumble chat. I don't know the connection there.
It's the internet. He tubes.
Do we have too many people on? Do you?
No, I don't think we have too many people because we had a lot more on before. Maybe it's, I don't know.
I think Pipeman Music is downloading those illegal MP3s he was bragging about earlier.
He was bragging, wasn't he?
You're supposed to use your dark for that.
You guys are talking about prawns. I don't know what he's downloading.
Feed the dwarfs in a sponge bath.
I would almost suggest that we all log out and log back in again to maybe let it resync. I think maybe maybe it's out of RAM or something, because it's long, long silences.
Okay, I'll be back in like 3 minutes.
Yeah, let's see who gets ops when we come back in.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.